The following is a Relevant Radio program and is protected under U.S. copyright laws. This program is made possible through the contributions of listeners like you. Support Relevant Radio by clicking on the donate icon at www.relevantradio.com.
Never knew such a love could be found. It's so amazing. I can taste, I can feel, I can see, for I am facing love divine. You are mine, you have found me just in time. You are mine, all in all, love divine.
Bridging the gap for your morning drive, it's Morning Air with Sean Harriott, along with Glenn Leverins, bringing you the news from the Vatican and around the world. And now, here's your host, Sean Harriott.
Hey, thanks for joining me for this hour of Morning Air. And just finishing up, putting a post up at the Morning Air blog here, we talked with Salvador, who was asking about his grandmother. She had converted to Jehovah's Witnesses quite a while back, and he just wasn't sure how to talk to her about the differences between the Catholic faith and what Jehovah's Witnesses believe. And Jeff Schwemm runs a ministry for Catholics who have come out of the Jehovah's Witness religion. So I'm putting a link there. Lots of great information, whether or not that's something that is kind of part of your own life or your own experience. A lot of good information about the differences, about how to look at what Jehovah's Witnesses believe in terms of Catholic teaching. So check that out. There we go. I'm publishing it right now. So you can check out the Morning Air page at relevantradio.com. Well, the city of Detroit's been in the news a lot lately, of course, with the auto bailout, but also with just the deteriorating situation in the city of Detroit and the way that the sort of collapse of the auto industry is affecting the whole metropolitan area of Detroit. And as I've mentioned on the show before, we lived in Detroit for 10 years before moving here for this job at Relevant Radio. My son just left Detroit a few months ago, got laid off in Christmas at Christmas, and never was able to find another job. So things are difficult. We wanted to get a little snapshot of what's going on. So joining me right now is Brother Bob Molloy. He's pastoral director for the Capuchin Soup Kitchen. The Capuchin Province of St. Joseph began its Detroit ministry on Mount Elliott Street in 1883, developed a religious mission to live and work among the poor. You can find out more about the great work that they do at cskdetroit.org. That's cskdetroit.org. Brother Molloy, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you. It's good to be with you.
Can you talk to us a little bit about just how things have changed in Detroit and in the greater metro area there in the last year or so?
Well, in the last year, as you know, the auto industry, with having its problems as they have had, we've had the effect in the soup kitchen, I'd say mainly with our income. In this past year, we were probably 10% down in the income. We depend mainly on donations. Many of the people that are donors, we get a lot of help, of course, from the auto industry, or did. That's down, although Ford has been very good to us in spite of all of this. But a lot of our donations come from the people that live in the surrounding area, and many of them now are experiencing the difficulties, not just in the city, but way out into the suburbs, and foreclosures and loss of jobs and that type of thing. So it's affected us in terms of our income, and we do have an increase in our numbers to some degree. We serve in the two soup kitchens. We have two sites where we serve food. Three meals a day at one site and two meals a day at the other. And we serve about 2,000 meals a day. We see an increase in the numbers coming there and a lot of new faces coming to where I'm working here at the original site.
Are you seeing people who have, people coming to the soup kitchen who've lost their jobs?
Yes, and in the city itself, we've had difficulties for a long time, as you probably know, and a lot of difficulty with employment and searching for jobs. One of the problems, too, is getting to a job with the people that live in the city. and the mayor now has had to cut back on the availability of public transit, which makes it even harder for people that are trying to get to their job sites.
Brother, that's one of the biggest biggest problems in the city. The public transportation system is just really, it's really antiquated. And it's really distressing to hear that what little is available has actually been cut back. That's amazing.
Yeah, it is. It's very poor. And as you know, it's called Motown. Detroit was built for the automobile. And so the efforts to make public transportation available have been pretty small over the years.
Yeah.
Now to cut back makes it even harder for people.
Is there much work in the city itself? I mean, I knew a few people who worked, lived in the city and worked in the suburbs. Typically, it kind of works the other way. But, you know, I knew some people who lived in the city who just could not find work. And so they ended up driving to the suburbs if they were able to afford a car, which often, as you said, was something they couldn't do.
Right. And among the people that come to the soup kitchen, most of them that are looking for work are looking beyond the city limits.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really can't find much of anything. They might find, you know, a job like throwing handbills,
yeah,
you know, little things that, or working, you know, for an agency that just employs them part time for a day or two, in the temp services they call them. But even that sometimes takes them up beyond the city. So it is very hard to find anything right here in the city today.
Mm. And with the problems, as you mentioned, I mean the foreclosures, the closings of plants, the layoffs, it's creating a ripple effect in the suburbs. And I wonder if it's just a matter of time before some of the suburban areas start to look the way the city has been looking for a while.
Yeah, in the paper recently, they indicated that four of the suburbs of Detroit, percentage-wise, have had more foreclosures than the city.
Wow.
Which really surprised me, and they had kind of a map in the paper indicating that. So we see a lot of the ripple effect going out certainly in the first ring of suburbs, and even beyond that. And some of the auto industry, of course, has been strong. For example, in Warren, which is just north of Detroit, a lot of difficulties out beyond the city limits.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there's going to be more of a need for the kind of services you provide now, more of a need in the suburbs?
Yes, I do. In fact, I was just talking, I help out in a parish north of Detroit here in Royal Oak, and they are working together with another agency now to set up a place. They have a shelter-type program where people can come for assistance. Now they're looking for a stable place that they can set up for overnight accommodations. Up until now, they've been moving from parish to parish or church to church to house people overnight. But that's becoming such a demand now that they're looking for a permanent place that they can set up as an overnight shelter, which you wouldn't expect in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking with Brother Bob Malloy. He's pastoral director for the Capuchin Soup Kitchen. You can check them out online at cskdetroit.org. More with Brother Malloy coming up in just a couple of minutes. Also, three questions along in about 15, 20 minutes or so. Your chance to win some cool stuff. We've got a three-month trial subscription to the CD of the Month Club from the folks at Lighthouse Catholic Media, and also a book by Father Timothy Gallagher, Discerning the Will of God, An Ignatian Guide to Christian Decision Making. That's a great book. We talked with Father Gallagher last week or the week before, and we've got a copy of that book for you as well. So all of that coming up in just a few minutes, so stay with us.
Morning Air, The Inner Life, Drew Mariani. Listen at work to your favorite Relevant Radio shows live online at relevantradio.com. Talk radio for Catholic life. Worldwide at relevantradio.com.
But so many people end up really encountering her in a deep way when they go on pilgrimage.
How has Mary touched your life?
And somebody asked me about that not long ago. They said, well, why? Why wouldn't she just meet us anywhere? Well, actually, I think she does meet us anywhere. But the problem is we don't live our life where we were able to experience the kind of love and grace that she's bringing.
Tune in to Mary's Touch and be inspired.
His Eminence Francis Cardinal George, Communion with our fellow Catholics is not just a kind of friendship. It's not like joining a club or a society or being part of a voluntary organization. The Church, created by the Eucharist, is an extension of the life of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. When we are united with Jesus in Holy Communion, we participate in His very life with the Father and the Holy Spirit. The great teachers of the Eastern Catholic Churches have a name for this. It's called sanctifying grace, or, in their terms, deification, being made like God. If we understand truly what's happening when we receive Holy Communion, that we're being united with Jesus Christ, true God and true man, deification is a good description of what God does with us. Becoming more and more like Christ, we are taken up into the life of the one God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Getting to know you.
The annual Relevant Radio Survey is now available at relevantradio.com.
Give us your feedback about Relevant Radio and tell us a bit about yourself.
Your input will help guide our programming and mission and provide vital information to our donors and advertisers.
It's easy. Only takes a few minutes and we won't follow up with you on the answers. Help make Relevant Radio even better.
Go to relevantradio.com and enter keyword survey. That's relevantradio.com, keyword survey.
It's 16 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Morning Air, and we're talking about the situation in the Detroit area, which unfortunately just continues to get worse as the auto industry there has been impacted. And really, the already weakened economy in Detroit is really feeling the pinch. I'm talking with Brother Bob Malloy, Pastoral Director for the Capuchin Soup Kitchen. You can check them out online, cskdetroit.org. That's cskdetroit.org. And Brother, you mentioned just the increased demand. Have you been able to keep up with the demand at your soup kitchen so far?
So far we have. We've been very fortunate. We have some reserves, so we have not had to lay people off. And we do have the resources to get the food that we need. And in fact, we grow a lot of our food now. And that's one of the hopeful things in the city of Detroit. We have an urban farm called Earthworks. And we grow a good deal of the fresh produce that we use at the soup kitchens at our two sites. And it's an exciting venture because we're employing people in the city area. A lot of volunteers work for us, local people, learning where food comes from and what it means. That's a great help, too.
How large is the area that you're farming?
We have three large city lots, and we have two large greenhouses, one quite large, another one a little smaller. And we produce, I don't remember exactly how much, I think I saw some figures here a while ago, but enough to serve at the two soup kitchens for 2,000 meals a day for quite a few, probably throughout the summer and into the fall.
Wow, so really a good chunk of your produce comes from your own garden during that time.
It does, right.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's a promising thing and a hopeful thing for the city. One of the things that we want to do, too, is teach children where food comes from, that it doesn't come from the local gas station, but it comes from farms, and they can be involved themselves in farming right here in the city, which is a great thing for them to learn and to be involved in.
That's fascinating, Brother. And I was just reading an article yesterday that said that Detroit News estimated that the amount now of vacant land, of course, a lot of it still has buildings on it, but I mean land that's essentially been abandoned in the city of Detroit is roughly the size of the city of Boston.
So, yeah, I read about that, too. It's amazing. It's incredible how much is abandoned and just open. Then you have to clean the soil, too, before you can do the organic farming. Right.
Yeah, there certainly would be a process there. But as you said, I mean, that's a very hopeful thing because that's something that people can actually do with some of this land because it seems like the housing situation isn't getting better and a lot of these houses just are not going to get, they're not going to end up being occupied again.
No. Foreclosures in Detroit mean that when a house is vacated and not watched, it'll be vandalized almost immediately, mm-hmm. and it becomes useless, so eventually torn down or burned down. So that's different. One of the differences, I think, between Detroit and the suburbs, so many of the homes become useless after a short period of time.
Yeah. And you haven't had any issues with vandalism with the gardens?
No, not so much. No.
That's good.
People are respectful, and a lot of the local people help in volunteering and growing produce and helping to harvest it.
That's really wonderful. That does sound like a very hopeful thing. You mentioned trying to help kids understand that food doesn't come from the local gas station, and that's one of the things about Detroit it's really hard to explain if you haven't been there, that there are no supermarkets in the entire city of Detroit.
Right. We had a large Farmer Jack's, which was a local chain, which closed now a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. We had a beautiful one not far from the soup kitchen here. And when it was closed, nobody took it over. Nobody bought the store and opened the business. So right now, local groups are getting together to try to open up a supermarket in the same location. But you're right, to go to a regular large supermarket, you have to go outside of the city.
And a lot of people, you know, getting back to what you were saying about public transportation and just where folks are at, a lot of people just aren't able to do that, and so they end up buying all of their food at convenience stores.
Right. Yeah, that the way that the earthworks began some years ago, one of our brothers was making up a list to go shopping, and one of the kids happened to see him writing, and he said, "What you doing?" And he said, I'm going shopping." Then the child said, "Well, what gas station are you going to?"
Mm.
And it was that spurred him to look into showing children where food really does come from, and he started the gardening on a small scale and has continued to grow. In fact, it's one of the premier urban farms in the country right now.
Mm, that's amazing. Because really, I mean, basic nutrition becomes a really serious issue for a family that's getting their food from a gas station.
Right.
You think about trying to put together a balanced meal from what you're going to find at a corner convenience store, and there aren't a lot of options there.
Right. It becomes an issue of justice as well.
Yeah, you know, very much
for
so.
People that have access to food, right?
Well, and you're also looking at the fact that people with the least amount of income are then proportionally spending the most amount of money on food.
Mm-hmm, right. And then the prices, too, for what you do pick up in a convenience store.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Brother Malloy, I'm just curious if you could talk, I guess, about the faith aspect just for a couple of minutes, because, I mean, there is such... I left Detroit about 5 years ago, so it was really before things started to kind of fall apart. But I worked in the city, and you know, there was just a lot of hopelessness. A lot of families really struggling to try to just make ends meet and keep their kids safe, and finding it really difficult to do that. And that was before things started to really deteriorate. What are you able to do, I guess, to bring hope to people?
That's a good question. We just had the readings this morning about hope from Romans. And I think not giving up on them is one thing. We started here, as you mentioned, in the 1800s, and in 1929 we opened a soup kitchen during the Great Depression. And it's a different population today than we had 80 years ago, but the needs are still there. And there's a lot of addiction now. A lot of extreme poverty, people living in abandoned homes. So my basic principle is not to give up on anybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that attitude gives hope to people that we're not just going to leave them, we're not going to abandon them. And I think the things that are happening in the city with the urban farming, not just with us, but with other agencies that are working in the same, the Greening of Detroit and others that are looking to the same hopes in the future. Children, we have a children's program at the other soup kitchen, the larger one. We were tutoring children, helping them to understand relationships and peacemaking, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
there's, I think, a lot of hope for the city. And some people are moving back in. I just talked to someone recently who said, I feel the call to come back into Detroit now, live there, and see what I can do to help help the city grow. It'll never come back in the way that it was when there were 2 million people living in the city. But there's so much creativity in looking at what can be done with the land and with the city itself.
Yeah, and if you do see people starting to come back into the city, I mean, they could really make a difference one neighborhood at a time. That can make a huge difference.
Right. And now next week we have our elections, and that's a hopeful thing, too, to elect a new city council and the mayor with his ideas of what he wants to do with the city. Whichever mayor that is elected, presumably it will be the one that we have right now, Mayor Bing. I think there are some good, there's a wonderful effort in trying to get the schools back in line. We have the person working on the schools from the larger government trying to get things in order, closing down schools that we don't need, building new ones, and getting the education up to par. That would be a big element of hope for, you know, getting people to want to come back into the city and to use our services.
Brother Malloy, do you think that the national attention that's been placed on Detroit lately, do you think that'll help at all?
A lot of the national attention seems to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the poor city that's deteriorating more and more all the time. I think if we could change some of that view to see the hope that does exist and to work on engendering more hope in the city, that would be certainly helpful. The negative press that we get, I don't think helps a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was amazed when I lived there at just some of the issues that were going on in Detroit that didn't get national attention. It seemed like if some of those things were going on in other parts of the country, they'd be front page news. I hope that as people are more aware of some of the problems, that they step in and maybe can help out a little bit.
Yes, I hope so. We have other things going on too, even with our situation here. We opened up a bakery for men that are coming out of prison or who are coming out of treatment, to learn the skill of baking. They live together, to learn the soft skills of relating with one another.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real sign of hope, too, that not only can they do that, but they can open another business in the city, which we're trying to do more of these days.
Well, Brother Malloy, thank you for all that you do, and thanks for sharing a little bit with us about what the Capuchins are doing in Detroit.
You're welcome. It's good to be with you.
I've been talking with Brother Bob Malloy, Pastoral Director for the Capuchin Soup Kitchen, and you can check out their website online. A lot of good information at cskdetroit.org. That's cskdetroit.org. And there's also a book we talked about last year called My Name Is. It's a photo essay of people that the Capuchins serve there at the soup kitchen. Just some amazing stories, letting people in their own words kind of share their own experiences. And the Capuchins are doing great work and have been doing great work for, 150 years or so in the city of Detroit, really making a difference. And this is a great opportunity for us, even though if you're listening now, most likely you don't live in the city of Detroit, you have an opportunity to reach out and help the people there as the Capuchins are really doing some great work and trying to make a lasting difference, as you heard Brother Malloy talking about this baking training program, the urban garden, which could be that urban farming, that could be really just genuinely transformative in the city. So check it out, cskdetroit.org. 29 minutes past the hour, lots more to come. We've got three questions coming up next. I've got a copy of the book, Discerning the Will of God, an Ignatian Guide to Christian Decision-Making by Father Timothy Gallagher. And also a three-month trial subscription to the CD of the Month Club from the folks at Lighthouse Catholic Media. You can find Lighthouse Catholic Media online. Just go to relevantradio.com. Click on the banner ad there. Give us a call to play three questions, 877-766-3777. That's 877-766-3777. Three questions coming up right after Glenn gives us an update with news from the Vatican and around the world.
Glenn is standing by to help if you need a hint. Call now and play three questions. 877-766-3777. That's 877-766-3777.
Good morning, I'm Glenn Lefrenz with Relevant Radio News. Religious freedom should be a shared universal value. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton made that statement while releasing the State Department's annual report on international religious freedom. She said religious freedom is a good way to promote more just and compassionate societies. Clinton said religious expression should be viewed with tolerance, not suppression. The report says China continues to be a nation of particular concern. Also on the list of the world's worst offenders of religious freedom and abuse, Iran and North Korea. Two Northwest Airlines pilots overshot the Twin Cities by 150 miles, were using personal laptop computers in violation of company rules. The FAA considering a possible suspension of their licenses. First Officer Richard Cole is now asking the media for privacy.
Nobody fell asleep. Nobody had an argument. Nobody had a fight. Other than that, I can't tell you anything. And I'd appreciate it if you guys would stop bothering me, okay? Yeah. I mean, I'm more than happy to tell you everything next week.
The pilots blame the incident on cockpit distraction as they discussed a new personnel scheduling policy. And voters in Maine evenly split over an initiative that seeks to overturn the same-sex marriage law passed by the state legislature. A survey by public policy polling shows 48% say they'd vote yes on the issue, another 48% say they'd vote no. Keeping you connected with the church and the world 24 hours a day and on the web at relevantradio.com. I'm Glenn Lefrenz, and this is Listener Supported Relevant Radio.
Relevant Radio listeners are growing in faith and falling in love with CatholicMatch.com.
I wanted to meet someone, first of all, with a common faith that I could get to know from there. And it's very hard right now to find places to go to meet people like that. I'd have dreams some nights and I'd wake up and tell my roommate, you know, the guy was just perfect. But I really never did know that there was somebody like Brian out there. I always tell him that he's the man of my dreams. We were engaged within, you know, about 6 months of meeting each other because we knew when we met each other that we found the person that God has set aside for us. And I tell people all the time that they need to get on Catholic Match.
CatholicMatch.com can bring God's people together for His ultimate purposes. Take a step of faith in your search for a spouse. Go to CatholicMatch.com/Drew today. That's CatholicMatch.com/Drew, where you can grow in faith and fall in love with Catholic Match.
You can be part of PRI's life-saving work cutting funding from abortion groups. Go to relevantradio.com, keyword life, or call 1-877-296-1531. 877-296-1531. The Population Research Institute.
Pope John Paul the Great said, I want to make sure that I do all I can to assure that when the Lord Jesus, the Son of Man, returns, He will still find faith on earth.
This is Relevant Radio.
I didn't take my faith seriously, which probably means I never really got it to begin with. No, I didn't want to give up sin. I mean, the reason we sin is because sin is fun. But it's self-love sin. But it's amazing with God's grace how easy trying to not sin it really is.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for whatever reason, we invite you to take another look. Visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
During this year for priests, Relevant Radio's Father Rocky is visiting with listeners across the country as they pray for our priests.
We're out here at Elmhurst, the Distribution Center Warehouse, and we've got Danny and Emily and Michael and Mark, and it's the year of the priest, and the Holy Father's asked us to pray for priests so that they be better, so I'm going to ask you guys to join me in prayer. I'll lead it. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. Praying for your priest in the year of the priest, this is Relevant Radio.
Have you prayed for your priest today? Learn more about the year for priests at relevantradio.com, keyword priest. Talk radio for Catholic life. This is Relevant Radio.
Answering Pope John Paul II's call for a new evangelization.
You know, you inspire. You really do.
Relevant Radio.
Christopher Minutes, thoughts on making every day count. Here's Father Dennis Cleary.
Today I'd like to share with you the words of Michel Quoist regarding the power of the individual. He said, if each note of music were to say, one note does not make a symphony, there would be no symphony. If each brick were to say, one brick does not make a wall, there would be no house. If each drop of water were to say, one drop does not make an ocean, there would be no ocean. If each of us were to say, one act of love cannot save humankind, there would never be justice and peace on earth. My friend, let your individual acts of love, hope, and compassion put us all on the road to justice and peace.
This message was brought to you by the Christophers. Thanks for listening, and remember that it's better to light one candle than curse the darkness.
Father Frank Hoffman, Father Thomas Acklin, and Father Richard Simon, your go-to team for any question you may have about the Catholic faith. Go Ask Your Father, weekdays at noon Central, 1 Eastern, on Relevant Radio.
Minutes in front of the hour, you're listening to Morning Air. I was talking with Brother Bob Malloy from the Capuchin Soup Kitchen in Detroit. He mentioned that, there are no grocery stores in the city of Detroit, city of almost a million people, not one grocery store. And it's really hard to sort of describe that if you haven't kind of seen it. But I remember when he mentioned this Farmer Jack store. It was a local chain, and the Farmer Jack store was they were the last one to pull out. There was like one Farmer Jack and I think one Kroger left, and they both closed. And there was nothing bigger than like a very small local market, and even those basically they're just all convenience stores now. So you've got people who don't have cars, they don't have access to good public transportation. And so they have to buy whatever's within walking distance. And what is within walking distance is the mini mart at the gas station where they get all their food. So it's that and fast food. That's where a lot of folks in the city of Detroit are getting most, if not all, of their food. So you have a lot of other problems that come along with that. 23 minutes in front of the hour.
It's three questions.
And Larry is in Austin, Texas, listening to Relevant Radio 970 AM. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Good. So how's the weather in Austin?
Oh, it's a beautiful day. You should be here. Yep. About 50 degrees. Oh. Sunshine.
Oh, that sound, that, that does sound nice, doesn't it, Glenn?
Yes. Yes.
Well, maybe we need to work on a trip to Austin, Glenn.
Yeah, live Morning Air from Austin. Maybe it's about time. Go visit our folks there, huh?
Yeah, maybe in, I don't know, February?
Sounds good.
Yeah. A good plan.
And come on down.
All right. Well, you've won a 3-month trial subscription to the CD of the Month Club from Lighthouse Catholic Media. And also a great book for you by Father Timothy Gallagher, Discerning the Will of God, an Ignatian Guide to Christian Decision Making.
I'm very excited to read that book. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. It's a great book. Question number one, Larry. In today's gospel reading, Jesus says that the kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed. Why? Because it provides seasoning and nourishment? Because it starts small and grows into something big? Or because it's yellow?
Well, I might be inclined to pick the second option.
Very good. Yeah, I think you could probably just rule out C right away. Glenn?
It's true, mustard can be yellow, but we're not after a color of the rainbow. Think of something that starts small and then begins to grow.
There you go.
Yeah.
Question number two, Larry. God gave the law to the Israel. This is a true or false question from the Catechism. True or false, God gave the law to the Israelites because they could not have determined right and wrong for themselves. Is that true or false?
Oh, gosh, let's see. Well, God implanted right and wrong on our hearts. In that sense, I would say we knew that before the law, there was still a sense of right and wrong.
Very good. That's right. You get back to the sort of the whole natural law thing. Glenn? Yeah.
Larry is a wise man there.
He is.
Right and wrong are written on our heart. Learning to read it, that's the hard part.
There
well, Jay Bujewski here in Austin is an author on natural law, so it's implanted in our in the gene pool here, I guess.
Yes. We've had him on the show. He's fascinating. I love talking to him. Larry, how long is the longest word in the English language? 29 letters, 45 letters, or 189,000 letters?
Is that in the catechism?
That is not a catechism question.
How about 45?
That works. Glenn?
Well, if you wanted me to give you a hint, I surely would. As it turns out, all the answers are good.
Yeah, depending on how you look at it, you could have actually gone with any of those, including the 189,000 letter answer, believe it or not.
You're kidding.
No. We'll lay that out in a second. So, Larry, great job, and just great talking to you this morning.
Hey, well, it's fun. I was listening to people calling in, and I thought I'd take the lark this morning and do it myself.
Well, you did a fabulous job. Thanks, Larry.
Bless you guys. You take care.
All right. 19 minutes in front of the hour. So, I was sitting in my office yesterday thinking, okay, I got to come up with some kind of trivia question. Gee, I wonder what the longest word in the English language is. And then I went to the repository of all human knowledge, Wikipedia, and I actually didn't stop there. So this isn't just from the Wikipedia entry, but Wikipedia does have a longest word entry. But one of the things I realized pretty quickly was in order to define the longest word or in order to know what it was, you had to figure out what you meant by that because there are words that just occur that are long. That for one, whatever reason, are just have a lot of letters in them. There are words that are coined, which means they're smushed together from other words. And some of those coined words were actually coined deliberately to be long. And then there are scientific terms, which can be just ridiculously long. So if you look at the longest non-coined, non-technical word, which I would say would be kind of... sort of without cheating, the longest word would be 28 letters long. The longest word in a major dictionary is a coined word, but it's 45 letters long. But Glenn, the longest word of all in the English language is the chemical name of titin, T-I-T-I-N. It's the largest known protein, and apparently because it's the largest known protein, it also has the longest name. It's 189,819 letters long.
Could be handy now, depending if your term paper is graded on number of words or how many pages you have to
yeah,
have.
Yeah, that's right. If you came up with a reason to include the name of this protein about, I don't know, well, actually, probably just once. You'd only have to do it once. So, I don't know how many words 189,000 letters works out to, but it's a lot. Actually found this in a couple of places where it was, it was spelled out. And you have to scroll down for quite a ways before you get to the bottom. So,
boy, I just hope it's never in a newscast.
That's great. The longest non-coined word in a major dictionary, let's see, is, I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce these. They're all very long and anti-disestablishmentarianism, that's 28 letters long, and that's probably the only one I could even pronounce.
That's the classic one.
It is. It is. There is one that is one letter longer than that. I'm not going to try to pronounce it.
Well, what's a supercalifragilisticexpialidocious?
I'm not sure how long that is.
or what that is.
That should count, too. My daughter actually had me spell that for her the other day. We were driving down the road, and she was asking me to spell various words, and she was trying to stump me, so she gave me supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And I think I did a fairly good job with it.
That might be just about as bad as texting while driving now.
that's probably. So, sir, what were you doing when the accident occurred? I was spelling supercalifragilisticexpialidocious for my daughter. Probably a new law. We'll see something on Dateline, and then there will be a new law about not spelling while driving. It's 16 minutes in front of the hour. More of Morning Air coming up.
Relevant Radio.
We know that this network, Relevant Radio, is helping us to not only to bridge the gap between faith and real life, but also to save our culture.
Talk radio for Catholic life. This is Relevant Radio.
And relevantradio.com.
It's lively talk on topics of the Catholic faith, only on the Catholic Cafe.
And Jesus uses the parable and he says, you will not be released from the prison until you have paid the last penny. We have to be purified before we are fully accepted into our spiritual bliss of heaven, right? And we become saints.
Pull up a seat at the Catholic Cafe. Heard each Sunday beginning at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Central, right here on Relevant Radio.
His Eminence, Francis Cardinal George.
The whole of Scripture shows us how God attempts to reach out to humanity that has always tried to pull away from God again and again. We're very good, personally, at running away from God. We always have been. You may know that beautiful poem called The Hound of Heaven by Francis Thompson. It describes how God is like a hunting dog, pursuing us, chasing after us, no matter how much we try to run away from Him, and we try again and again. The thanksgiving that we offer in our prayer is gratitude to God precisely because He relentlessly pursues us. We should be grateful. Everything God has done for humanity is done out of love, even though our own history is very often a refusal of God's gifts to us, collectively and individually. The tremendous love that God has for us and His many gifts that He shares with us. It enables us finally to recognize that in the end, everything is gift.
On Call, now with a wider focus. Issues important to today's Catholic family.
Hi, I'm Wendy Weiss. Join us Tuesday for On Call. As we prepare for the Thanksgiving holiday, we'll talk about the ABCs of gratitude, naming our blessings. That's Tuesday, On Call, on Relevant Radio.
On Call with Wendy Weiss. Weekdays at 1 Central, 2 Eastern, on Relevant Radio.
Minutes in front of the hour. Sean Harriet on Morning Air coming up next hour. We'll talk with Kurt Arns. He joins us, I don't know, we talk with him maybe once a month or so, maybe not quite that often, but Kurt is a farmer in Nebraska. He is a third generation farmer in Crofton, Nebraska. So his dad farmed the land, his grandfather farmed the land. It's been in the family for a long time. And he talks about what life is like in a rural setting and also the kind of spiritual connection to farming. I really love what just the perspective that Kurt brings to things. But Kurt, unfortunately, is in the middle of a very serious situation with his parents. They were involved in a very serious auto accident. His father nearly died. And really, I mean, when you hear him describe the accident, there's no earthly reason why either one of them should still be alive. I mean, really, it just, the car went off the road at full speed, went airborne, turned over, and they're both alive. They didn't walk away from it, but they're both alive and both recovering. So Kurt's going to share that with us, just what that experience was like for him, getting a call from his mom on the scene, telling him to come quickly. And the kind of support that he received from the community. So we'll be talking with Kurt about that coming up in the next hour. Also, Monica Kopp, she's part of a ministry called One Runway to Reality. And they help girls to be able to see that they can be fashionable, they can, you know, not stand out at school, feel good about themselves, but at the same time not fall for society's the culture's essentially lie that you are just the sum of your parts, because that's really kind of what the culture is teaching us. And so Monica will talk with us a little bit about that as well. And I've talked about this on the air before, but I'm just constantly amazed at how young the indoctrination starts. I mean, you look at programs for kids, you look at what they're selling at, you know, the Gap Kids store and Old Navy and all that stuff. When we really saw a change in all that, I think it was probably last year when Julie kind of hit school age. And we had seen it before when she was younger, but really hitting school age, it's like all of a sudden, all of these outfits are just little tiny versions of what they're selling to teenagers. And so you've got, you know, hip hugger jeans, the low cut hip huggers, that are made for six-year-olds and just stuff that just kind of boggles my mind. You know, things that bear the midriff of an elementary school student, that kind of stuff. So amazing. So Monica will be talking with us about kind of how to counter all of that. That's coming up in the next hour. Last hour we were taking your calls for Father Rocky. One of the questions we got was from Salvador. His grandmother is a Jehovah's Witness, left the Catholic Church, became a Jehovah's Witness, and is now kind of sharing with her grandson why she thinks he should leave too, talking about their view of God and Scripture. And Salvador was saying, you know, I don't know where to go to get answers to any of these questions or really to sort of even get a basic understanding. One great place to start is the Fellowship of Catholic Ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. Jeffrey Schwemm is a former Jehovah's Witness who became Catholic. And Doug, we should have Jeff back on the show. We haven't had him on for a while. And let's make plans to do that. Jeffrey Schwemm. Okay. And Jeff talks about just his whole experience with leaving the Jehovah's Witnesses, and it took a real toll on him as far as his, you know, family relationships being severed, that kind of thing. But there's a lot of good information at that website looking at what Jehovah's Witnesses teach, what they believe, what the Catholic Church says about some of those teachings. So I just want to encourage you to check that out. You can go to relevantradio.com, keyword morning air, and check that out. So lots of good information there. Also coming up on tomorrow's show, Monsignor John DeWayne will join us with our Rome Report. We've been talking for the last couple of weeks about the Synod of Bishops, the African Synod of Bishops, which just concluded. A lot of information came out. They have these 5-minute talks that each of the bishops gives, and the talks last over, it was a couple of days, I think, maybe 2 or 3 days. There were several hundred of them, so they're going to be distilling all those down, probably publishing them. Monsignor DeWayne explained to me that the rule is they don't get published unless the bishops sort of vote to have them published, but in the last few synods, they pretty much always have. So I think we're going to probably see those kind of distilled down. But we'll get some more analysis of the synod itself and just some other thoughts about things going on in Rome and elsewhere from Monsignor DeWayne. That's all coming up on the program tomorrow. Just a reminder to you that you can check out the Morning Air blog. I mentioned the Fellowship of Catholic Ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. I've got a link to that at the Morning Air blog. Lots of other good information, including information about guests that have been on the program, books that we've featured, that kind of thing. You can check all that out at relevantradio.com, keyword Morning Air. More to come here on the program. Stay with me.
True knowledge of God comes not from books, but from an interior purification through conversion of the heart.
Relevant Radio.
This is Saint of the Day for October 27th from the Franciscans and St. Anthony Messenger Press. Today we celebrate Blessed Bartholomew of Vicenza. Dominicans honor one of their own today, Blessed Bartholomew of Vicenza. This was a man who used his skills as a preacher to challenge the heresies of his day. Bartholomew was born around 1200. At 20, he entered the Dominicans. Following his ordination, he served in various leadership positions. As a young priest, he founded a military order whose purpose was to keep civil peace in towns throughout Italy. In 1248, Bartholomew was appointed a bishop. For most men, such an appointment is an honor and a tribute to their holiness and their demonstrated leadership skills. But for Bartholomew, it was a form of exile, urged by an anti-papal group that was only too happy to see him leave for Cyprus. Not many years later, however, Bartholomew was transferred back to Vicenza. Despite the anti-papal feelings that were still evident, he worked diligently, especially through his preaching, to rebuild his diocese and strengthen the people's loyalty to Rome. During his years as bishop in Cyprus, Bartholomew befriended King Louis IX of France, who was said to have given the holy bishop a relic of Christ's crown of thorns. Bartholomew died in 1271. He was beatified in 1793. There's more about the saints, along with inspiration and Catholic resources, at our website, franciscanradio.org. From the Franciscans and St. Anthony Messenger Press, this is Saint of the Day.
Live interactive spiritual direction, heard on the Inner Life.
It needs to begin with the habits of prayer. If we don't establish those habits, we will fall out.
Don't miss the Inner Life, 12 noon Eastern, 11 a.m. Central, only on Relevant Radio.
Five minutes in front of the hour, Sean Harriet on Morning Air, and we've got just a few minutes here until we roll into the next hour, and Kurt Arns will be joining me again. Just an incredible story about his own life, his own family. His parents were involved in a really serious, nearly fatal auto accident just a couple weeks ago, and he is obviously still struggling to kind of work his way through all of that, the near loss of his parents, and certainly their continued recovery. But you want to be listening, because Kurt is not only sharing the story, but he really has, I think, some powerful things to say about what happens when a community pulls together. And it gives us a snapshot into rural life, farming life, which is something that not all of us necessarily know a whole lot about. But the other thing is, I think it just is a beautiful reminder that we can all be there for each other, that you don't have to live in a small town or go to a small parish to care about other people. And so I just want to encourage you to be listening to that. The war on Christmas has already gotten going. A little Michigan story here. Let's see if I can pull this up real quick. A lawsuit challenging a new ban on a 63-year-old Michigan roadside nativity display. The 63-year-old tradition of having a privately maintained nativity scene in a public median in Warren, Michigan, has been ended after the local road commission received a threatening letter from the Freedom From Religion Foundation. The move has resulted in a lawsuit charging that the ban on the display is discriminatory. In 1945, St. Anne's Parish received a donation of Christmas nativity statues, which were too large to set up inside the church. Some parishioners thought the statues and a manger could be displayed on the center in the center of the village during Christmas holidays. Warren's village president granted permission to display the nativity scene on the road median. Since 1945, a nativity display has been erected at the location by Warren resident John Sadawa and members of his family. He took over responsibility for the display from his father, Joseph, who died in 1965, community members, private business, and organizations have also helped maintain the tradition. The Freedom From Religion Foundation claimed that the presence of the nativity display violated the constitutional principle of separation of church and state, because clearly that median is holy ground. In December 2008, after receiving the group's letter, the Road Commission demanded that Sadawa immediately remove the display, citing improper permits. Sadawa's 2009 permit application was denied on the grounds that the nativity display clearly displays a religious message in violation of the separation of church and state. Thomas More Law Center is involved in this, and there is such a misunderstanding of what separation of church and state actually means. And to say that in a median on a highway, that... that's just crazy. Okay. Hey, coming up next, we've got Glenn's story. We've got news from Glenn, bringing us news from the Vatican and around the world. Glenn's Story Corner is coming up. Kurt Arns will also talk with Monica Copps about how to teach your kids about chastity and fashion. All of that coming up.
Thanks for listening to this hour of Morning Air on listener-supported Relevant Radio. For information on guests and topics, go to relevantradio.com and enter keyword Morning Air. That's relevantradio.com, keyword Morning Air.